Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
You know, there's something really special about the 8th overall draft pick in the NFL's ultimate wild card pick. From the Hall of Fame legends to some of the biggest what-ifs in gridiron history, the number 8 spot has shaped dynasties and defined eras. Today, we're diving into the deep archives with Ed Cleese to break down the hits, the misses, and the fascinating trends in the history of the 8th pick in the NFL draft. Welcome to the Pigpen, your Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day cycle of looking at every first-round draft pick with Ed Cleese. He's up now. Bring us the history, Ed.
Hey, Darren, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ed. You know, today's episode, we are talking about slot number 8, another top 10 pick. And what do you have to say about the number 8 pick in the NFL draft's history?
Well, we've talked about it, Darren. It sounds like we're kind of marking the 13th pick as where it all started to change. That's kind of like where we start to say, okay, now we see we've stepped up in class, and that has been consistent, like 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, all really good, kind of almost a little bit, each one a little bit stronger than the one before, or at least close. And then this is the first one. This is not a bad group. It's a very good group. But this, I would say this 8th pick doesn't quite stack up to the past 5 picks or so. But it's still a solid group, but maybe mildly disappointing from what I was expecting. But still, we got some good names here.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting pick. You know, even when we go into this week's draft, people are going to be talking about trading back from this pick, and even though it's top 10, you know, sometimes these drafts don't have all the caliber of players that some other drafts do, and maybe there's not 10 players that people find to be first round worthy. Let's say,
of course.
But, like you said, there's some golden apples here in the group that have been found. So let's talk about who your honorable mentions are and in the top since 1980.
Yeah, as you know, I always kind of like to start recent. And I would say very recently, the rookie of the year last year was the 8th pick in the draft. And that would be Tet McMillan for the Panthers. So we've got some real nice history, very recent. And then kind of this kind of stuck out. The Falcons had the eighth pick in the draft 3 years in a row. And so they took, and it's kind of funny, they went running back or receiver, running back, quarterback. So the three main skill positions. They took Drake London, who I'd say is good, you know, for sure, a good player. Bijan Robinson, who looks to be a great player. And then the big one for them is Penix. At quarterback, who is, you know, on the fence, you know, with a little bit of a down arrow because of the injury history, which is significant. So if he doesn't work out, then it kind of makes the other two may not matter as much. So, but that was kind of interesting that those teams all, that one team took those three positions 3 years in a row.
Yeah, it's kind of neat, you know, if they have any kind of luck like the Cowboys did, these could be those three picks at number 8 in a row could be like their triplets, you know, if they take off and have become strong offensive performers more so than they are already.
Right. And then we move on to quarterbacks. We always like to look at the quarterbacks. Only two have been taken here since 1980. We had one real bust, unfortunately, for the Titans. That would be Jake Locker, taken in 2011. Who did really nothing in his career. And then the very next year, the Dolphins took Ryan Tannehill at the 8th overall pick. And it's kind of ironic. He actually winds up having his better years in Tennessee with the Titans kind of after they had given up on Locker. And Tannehill, you know, that's one of those interesting ones. I think you'd ultimately say he was not worth the 8th pick in the draft. I don't think that's what the team, certainly not the team that drafted him, was hoping for. But he also was nowhere near a bust. So he had a nice career. You know, he was a pretty good quarterback. He had some decent seasons. I think he was one of those guys that you felt could only take you so far, but certainly wasn't bad and kind of in that no man's land when we're judging whether a pick worked out or not.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting player to talk about. You know, he wasn't very popular when they did pick him eighth, but I think he did all right for himself in his NFL career.
Yeah, he did just fine. And then there's a few guys that didn't do just fine. And, you know, nothing massive here, but we did have a couple of defensive ends that flamed out in the for their teams. Derek Harvey was taken in 2008 by the Jags, and he had 8 career sacks. Jamal Anderson was taken by the Falcons. Not that Jamal Anderson, not the Dirty Bird running back Jamal Anderson. There was a defensive end, Jamal Anderson, also taken by the Falcons in 2007, and he had 7.5 career sacks, which obviously if you're drafting a guy at number 8 to get sacks and he gets you 7 in his career, that's not good. David Terrell was a wide receiver taken by the Bears in 2001. Who only had 128 career catches and fewer than 10 touchdowns. And then one guy I really didn't remember at all, the Eagles took a running back named Michael Haddix in 1983. His best season in the league was 311 yards rushing, and he had 3 career touchdowns. So those were a few guys that really stuck out as not working out for their teams. And unlike Tannehill, I think you'd say those guys were busts.
Yeah, when you don't have the stats and you can only show maybe even a half of a season of what's expected for your career, right. Not real good numbers. Let's take a break for a moment to tell you about a new product so that you can take and put your football knowledge that we feed you each and every day to the test. It is the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. You're the quarterback. You call the shots, choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains on a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunk of yardage. It isn't just a quiz. It's a march for glory. It's the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Remember, when the huddle's over, when you picked your play, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep those chains moving. Cross that yellow line to reset your downs and earn a critical audible. Stuck on a tough defensive look? Use those audibles to strip away 2 wrong answers and find your open receiver. Watch the play clock. You've got just 25 seconds to make the read. Take too long, and it's a 5-yard penalty for delay of game. It's game action. In this stadium, your brain is the engine, but the clock is the opponent. The mission is simple. Score as many touchdowns as possible in 5 minutes, and when the clock hits 0, your score hits the global leaderboard. Are you a bench warmer or a Hall of Famer? Step up to the line. Your drive starts now on pigskindispatch.com, the Trivia Drive. Don't let your football history knowledge go to waste. Try the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. And now, let's get back into our program.
Yeah, but we've got some really good honorable mentions. One guy that I really like, I'm a little partial to, is in 2004, the Falcons took D'Angelo Hall at corner, D-Hall. And he wound up with the Redskins. He was a bit of a polarizing player for the Redskins within the fan base. He was one, you know, whenever the corner gets beat, it's very obvious, right? And he did have a tendency to sometimes get roasted. He took some chances, and sometimes he'd give up the big play, but he was a big playmaker. He had a 4 interception game on Jay Cutler in Chicago. One he took to the house. So he was a real big playmaker. He showed up in a lot of big games. I really liked him. Another defensive back would be Roy Williams from OU, played for the Cowboys. He got off to like a, you know, rocket launcher start, and it looked like, oh, he's going to be a star safety. And then it just kind of leveled out. And I think with him was, especially in college, he was that like hybrid linebacker almost. He's one of the best college defensive players I've ever seen. He was unbelievable in college, and he kind of played that safety linebacker thing. And I think in the NFL, maybe he just didn't quite have the athleticism to be that long time safety, even though his career did start pretty well and he wound up having a nice, you know, a decent run there. You're going to remember in 2000, your Steelers took Plaxico Burress, who had a kind of another polarizing career with some off field issues, then was a Super Bowl hero for the Giants, the tall, lanky, rangy receiver. James Ferrier also was drafted in this spot, played for the Jets and Steelers. And my last cut was Joey Galloway, receiver taken in 95 by the Seahawks. He played a really long time, like a lot longer than I remember. And he never had that one big year. I don't think he made any Pro Bowls or anything like that, but he was always a deep threat. He was always part of whoever he played for's offense, like as in that sort of like burner role, to take the top off the defense role. And he did it very well for a very long time.
I can't believe you didn't take Potsy into your top five. James Ferrier's my guy, man.
You love Potsy, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Actually, I interviewed Dick LeBeau a couple years ago, and he had a book out, and he was talking. The three guys that did the forwards were Polamalu, Harrison, and Ferrier. And he asked me during the interview, he goes, "You know why I chose those three to do my forward?" And I said, "They're all outstanding players." He goes, "They were two of them were defensive player of the year, and Ferrier should have been defensive player of the year. The year Ray Lewis got it." So he wouldn't even say Ray Lewis's name, but
a little shade back at the Ravens at the same time. I like it. Yeah, Ferrier was a nice player for sure.
Yeah. All right. So who did make your top five?
Well, we're going to start with number five, and that is a guy that's still playing, and that is Christian McCaffrey, taken in 2017 by the Panthers. And he is one of those guys. He actually, if you look at his numbers, Darren, he's not necessary, especially when we factor in the shorter lifespan for running backs. He's not necessarily trending to be on some of those all-time lists because of the injuries. Mm-hmm. But eye test and just watching football, he is a game changer. And I think anybody that watches these games feels that, knows it. I'm sure defensive coordinators feel it and know it. He is such a threat in both the run and the pass. He's between the tackles. He's tough. He can bust it outside. He's a phenomenal athlete. He's probably this is tough to say, but I would list him probably pretty high up there in the all-time running back athletes we've ever seen. You know, just what his ability to affect everything on the field. And he's certainly has a chance still to move up the list if he can stay healthy and continue to produce at the level he does when he is healthy.
Yeah, he is a weapon, and he's he's fearless. He will, he's not a big guy. That's probably some of the injury problems he has, but he will stick his nose in there with the big boys and run between the A gaps and the B gaps all day long with the best of them. And you really got to hand it to the guy, because he's given up probably over 100 some pounds to some of the defenders.
He's a star.
Yeah, certainly is. Good pick. All right, so who's number four?
Number four is a guy that was a star, but nobody really remembers him as that. And it's a guy that I kind of stumped for over the years. Number four, I've got Leslie O'Neal, taken in 1986, defensive end by the Chargers. He was the defensive rookie of the year in 1986. And then he missed his entire second season. And he only had one start in his third season. So he had this great rookie year, then was kind of gone for 2 years due to injury. And as we've seen that era, we saw a lot of guys' careers end early due to injury. But his did not, because then he came back super strong. He wound up in 6 out of 7 years that followed. He had 12 and a half or more sacks in each of those seasons. That was 6 Pro Bowls in an era where Pro Bowls mattered. And the 1 year he didn't in those 6 out of 7, he had 9.5. So he's right there for me. And we talked about John Abraham many episodes ago, a guy that's really high up there on the all-time sack list. He's in the top 15 as well, Leslie O'Neal. And again, much like Abraham and O'Neal are the two guys in this large group, if you look at the all-time sack leaders, that are not in the Hall of Fame. And Abraham is a guy that I think some people kind of stump for a little bit because he's still somewhat recent. Whereas now Leslie O'Neal's been out for 30 years now. He hasn't played. So I don't think anybody remembers him. He was Chargers. They were not great in that era. They did go to the Super Bowl in 94. He was on that team. But I think he's a forgotten guy, but was a heck of a player and a really sort of an all-time edge rusher.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those guys that are from that – even before the Leslie O'Neal, that there were just great pass rushers from the defensive line that are not in Hall of Fame. The LC Greenwoods, Claude Humphreys, there's a handful of them that probably in that same category. They're probably, and sacks didn't count before 1980, but
right. If you go on Pro Football Reference, they do have like the unofficial list that goes next to the official list. So I think they've tried to piece it together, but it is unofficial.
Yeah, they had one of my guests end up selling him that, John Turney of Pro Football Journal. And watched all the game film as much as he could get from like 1950 something on and counted sacks and put them in there. So they're unofficial, but I trust what John does because he does really good work.
That is dedication.
Pro Football Journal. And yeah, he that was his life things, and he ended up selling those stats over to Pro Football.
Good Reference. For him.
Yeah, so they're pretty accurate. Definitely a good pick for Leslie O'Neal. So who's number three?
Number three is a guy that's in the Hall of Fame. And he was a running mate to a guy that we had number one on our list several picks ago, and that's Mike Munchak, a guard for the Oilers taken in 1982. He basically had a parallel career with Bruce Matthews. He did not play as long as Matthews. Munchak was more like the 80s. I think he played into the 90s just a little bit, whereas Matthews played two decades in the league, which is why we'll rank Matthews ahead of Munchak. But basically, you had a Hall of Fame guard on the left side, you had a Hall of Fame guard on the right side all through the 1980s for the Oilers. So you had this incredible interior O-line. He made 9 Pro Bowls. He made 2 All-Pro teams. He was on the All-Decade team in the 80s. Not much else to say other than he was a Hall of Fame guard right there with another one right beside him.
Yeah, and a great offensive line coach too later on in his career for multiple NFL teams. So yeah, good selection there. Who's next?
Let's stick with the O-line. Number two, we've got Willie Roaf, taken in 1993 by the Saints. Now, how about this, Darren? He is on 2 all-decade teams. He made it for both the 90s and the 2000s, and with 2 different teams as well. You know, everybody remembers his 9 years in New Orleans, and then he had 4 years in Kansas City. He was injured his last year in New Orleans and didn't make any all-pro teams or anything. But he was first-team All-Pro or second-team All-Pro in his 3 years in Kansas City. Or 4 years, I'm sorry, in Kansas City. So he had a little bit of a resurgence there, was essentially just as dominant in Kansas City as he was in New Orleans. I very much remember him. You know, it's not often that an offensive lineman sticks out to sort of the casual fan. But I kind of feel like in the 90s, everybody knew that Willie Roaf was like a big deal. And was like this awesome player on these not so awesome teams. Like a lot of people, you know, talked him up a little bit. And to back that up, he only played in 3 career playoff games through his Hall of Fame. So he's never on very good teams, but he was a really, really, really good offensive tackle. And he has his gold jacket.
Yeah, definitely a big man and a big gold jacket to put on, just like Munchak's were. Yep. So. Yeah, great selection there. All right, so who's your top pick?
Number one, man, talk about legend. And just when you think of football, I just think this is one of those guys that pops in my head, especially for my age and my era, I would say, of growing up. And that is Ronnie Lott, who is number one on this list, drafted in 1981 by the 49ers. And we're going to talk about kind of where I kind of rank him in a minute. But we'll go through his stuff. First of all, he was on all 4 of the Super Bowl teams that paralleled with Montana. In a lot of ways, he and Montana were there almost the exact same time. Montana was there a little bit before, and I think Lott stayed a little bit after. You know, but they basically overlapped the entire 80s together. So you had this quarterback of the offense, and you had the quarterback of the defense, essentially. He was first-team All-Pro in his rookie year. He led the league in interceptions twice. He led the league in tackles once. 63 career interceptions, 20 postseason games. He has the most interceptions in postseason history. Something that really, really sticks out and really sets him apart for me, he was drafted as a corner. He played his first 4 seasons in the league as a corner. And then they decided that he was such a ball hawker, they just wanted him, and such a hitter, they wanted him to roam a little more. So they changed his position mid-career, and he wound up being just as good, if not better, of a safety than he was a corner. He was a Hall of Fame corner, and he was a Hall of Fame safety all at the same time. He was a dominant player on a dominant team. That wasn't always, you know, defense wasn't their mantra, obviously, in the 80s. It was more of the offense, the West Coast offense. They were very good on defense, and he was the standout for sure. So previously we have talked about three other safeties on our list. I think two were number one on our list, and one was number two. And that would be Steve Atwater, Troy Polamalu, and Ed Reed. So I got to thinking, so previously I had said, okay, I've got Reed just a little bit ahead Polamalu, and I had Polamalu a little bit ahead of Atwater. And now I got Lott a little bit ahead of all of them, just a little bit, because, and maybe it's a little bit of bias from when I grew up, but I think he was just affected the games just a tad bit more, and he did so much winning that Ronnie Lott's the legend. I think you boil it down. I said I thought Ed Reed was in the running for best safety ever. Polamalu's in the conversation, but I think our winner is Ronnie Lott.
Yeah, anybody that can be in the middle of a game and have them take part of his finger off and go back into the game, that's one tough hombre that you want on your team.
When you go do some research on that, I think that has been very romanticized over the years, it sounds like. Like, Lott doesn't tell it quite as romantically as other people do, or that, you know, I don't think it happened. I think it went from like an off-season thing that they decided to like it happened in the middle of the game. They amputated his finger. So it sounds like there's been some lore around that over the years. But he did a funny quote. He said, when they took the tape off, he said, my pinky looks like E.T.'s head. I kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, phone home, right?
Yep. There you go. Another great 80s reference from a great 80s player. He was very good at the end of his career with the Raiders and then the Jets still. He did finish with the Raiders and Jets. He was not a lifelong 49er.
Yeah, and you said that you had three. I think you may have even had a fourth one in there if you count. I think you had Rod Woodson, who had a similar trajectory.
I always think of him as a corner. Safety. Yep. Yep.
I know I like to forget about him being safety, but
He shifted at the end of his career, where Lott was closer to the beginning.
But probably that's why somebody had the idea to do it, because of what was done with Ronnie Lott.
Maybe.
Saw the
maybe.
Success.
Perhaps. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a great top five you had. Three of our six Hall of Famers that were taken, you just mentioned, had there. But one guy that I'm not sure that I remember you mentioning, though, but Roquan Smith was also taken this. And I think he's got a potential. His career is, great with Chicago. It's great with the Ravens. He might be wearing a gold jacket someday, because he's definitely a good player too. But we had three other Hall of Famers that were outside your 1980 segment that you're talking about. Larry Zonka was taken by the Dolphins in 1968 in one of their first drafts. Lance Allworth was taken by the 49ers in 1962. We know he ended up going over to the AFL playing with the Chargers, but he was in the NFL draft that year. And Jim Parker of the Baltimore Colts was taken Hall of Fame tackle 1957. So it's been some great players, all the way through the 90 years of the draft since 1937. That takes us to our most popular position. If you're wondering, hey, what's somebody going to draft this year? Well, chances are, tackle will be taken, because that has been the most popular position drafted at that number eight spot. And our draft fact of the day is kind of an interesting one. It states that since 1999, a normal draft has been about 250 to 260 players. The draft with the most players taken was 1976, when 487 selections were made by only 28 teams. Of course, they had 17 rounds, I believe, that year. Seattle and Tampa Bay were expansion teams that year. Tampa got the number one pick. Seattle got the number two pick. I think it was a coin flip. And then rounds two through five, they also got an extra pick, each of those expansion teams, at the end of the round. So took them up to 487, by far the most of any NFL draft. The 1976 draft was the final one to have 17 rounds. It was reduced to 12 rounds in 77, and in the early 90s, down to 7 rounds as we know it today.
And it didn't help the Bucs very much, because they started 0-26.
Right, yeah. And Seattle didn't do too bad. They were like at least a mediocre to a decent team.
Right.
So, yeah. So interesting drafts out of the day. And that sort of wraps up our day eight coverage in our slot eight and the great history that we talked about here today. Ed, we'd love to have you come back tomorrow and talk about the seventh spot in overall NFL drafts.
We'll see you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.